It's the first adult color science fiction film. It's Buck Rogers for the mature. So sit back, fasten your seatbelt, and behold...
Within 3 days, all the people on Earth will die.
Wilma's old flight instructor and his over-the-hill squadron join with Buck to avert a terrible threat to Earth.
We're going to have to destroy that base and eliminate that nerve gas.
We've got to attack.
Wilma and Buck are down there.
Do you know what pain is, Rogers?
The year is 1987, and NASA launches the last of America's deep space probes. In a freak mishap, Ranger 3 and its pilot, Captain William Buck Rogers, are blown out of their trajectory into an orbit which freezes his life support systems and returns Buck Rogers to Earth 5 years later.
Once again, it's time for Buck Fucking Rogers. Here with you is Diablo Frank, and with me this time is...
Old Dude.
We're going to cover Return of the Fighting 69th, original air date October 25th, 1979. When I told you I wanted you to do a Buck Fucking Rogers episode, what were you expecting to cover?
I was expecting to cover the original Buck Rogers, either the serial or the movie or...
Is the serial different from the movie?
Not really.
So Buster Crabbe did the serial, right?
Yeah.
Who did the TV show?
I don't really remember. First off, I only saw a couple of TV shows because it only aired in certain areas. And it was more like the kiddie afternoon show. There was a bunch of stuff like that. The comic strips and the comic books and all that kind of crap. And of course, when I was a kid, that stuff was still around.
How familiar were you with the comic strip and the comic books?
Oh, I liked him better than Flash Gordon, and they're basically the same thing.
Well, you know Buck Rogers came first. Flash Gordon was the ripoff.
Well, maybe, but Flash Gordon was the most successful.
No argument there. No, truly. The person who did the art on Flash Gordon, Alex Raymond, was a very revered comic strip artist. Everybody who did comic books wanted to be a comic strip artist, and most of them wanted to be Alex Raymond.
Yeah, but even the serials were more successful. I don't know about the novella.
Well, did Flash Gordon's serial come out before Buck Rogers? It did, didn't it? When the whole thing that the Buster Crabbe did...
both date back.
Oh, yeah, they're both old. But, I mean, I think the Buster Crabbe had already done the Flash serial, and that had been successful. And then he dyed his hair and did the Buck Rogers serial.
I don't really know. Like I've said before, you're more into the... I may catch some dates, but I really don't care that much about what they say after a movie. Most of that stuff I watched when I was a kid. This Buck Rogers of the 25th century, I remember this was on, and you were a kid.
Did you see the movie serials, or are you just aware of them?
Yeah, no. When I... Those things played, we would go to Saturday matinee, and it would almost always be some ancient picture. The first matinee I ever went to, I saw it on a Navy base in Corpus Christi, King Kong versus Godzilla. And then about 1964, I went to one in downtown Nashville. And I think it had a Buck Rogers. But the movie was House on the Haunted Hill. I firmly remember it.
Vincent Price.
Yeah. And see, I was there by myself. I didn't have a cousin with me or none of that.
Now, I know you never were big on spook stuff. Did it scare you at all, or were you just thinking it was cool?
No, I like that stuff. But you got to remember that here's this kid, never been to a movie without somebody with him. And I'm going to tell you, I was looking around, people all around me. But I moved till I was in the row with my back up against the wall to make sure I could see everything that was going on. Because that movie scared the crap out of me. And of course, when you watch it today, it's like really is laughable. But
now, that was a William Castle joint, right? Did they do any weird stuff in the theater? Any shaking chairs or anything?
No, this was after that. The 64, that kind of crap.
Okay, even if the movie had been made that way, they wouldn't have been running the program anymore, right? They would have been setting up the theaters for all that kind of shit. I think there's a roadshow thing anyway.
But, you know, I remember going to, and they didn't do it on matinees either. I went to a couple of shows in the afternoon. I think one was in Nashville. One might have been in San Antonio. I can't remember. But one of them, they let smoke come into it. I can't remember exactly. It might have been Creature of the Black Lagoon or one of those that were similar to that. There was one that I saw in a drive-in. where they flashed these lights. It was one kind of like The Blob. It wasn't The Blob, but it was a movie like that. And they flashed these lights in your face from the screen. And there was this loud explosion behind us. You couldn't see it, but later on, everybody got out of their cars and looked. And you could still see smoke coming up from where you paid to get in. But most of that stuff was over with.
So what do you remember about the old Buck Rogers serial, though? Did you just get a snippet, or did you get to see the whole thing?
No, well, see, that's the deal. You never got to see the whole serial, unless you went every week or something. I think one summer, this was like 1969 or something, we were going to the cinema, I can't remember, I think it was the Cinema 1 and 2 at Gulfgate, but it could have been the Santa Ana Theater that used to be on Broadway, I can't remember. But me and Blue Mule, one summer, went to Santa Rosa, that was the name of that. We went to every matinee, and we weren't going for the movies they were showing. We were going so we could finally see an entire serial, but it wasn't Buck Rogers, it was Flash Gordon.
So how'd you like Flash Gordon?
I like Flash Gordon. Most of the ones that we saw were Western. You know, John Wayne did serial, but I'm trying to remember who the other, it wasn't Gene Autry. It was some other cowboy that was big, never really made movies, but made serials. They were showing that kind of stuff. I can remember when they were still showing the newsreel from the 40s.
Just for nostalgia, I guess?
Well, but by that time, it was a history lesson.
Right.
I'm not talking about the 50s. I'm talking about the 60s.
Right.
Anything to fill time. Yeah, I think we paid like a quarter to get in or something. Dollar movies came out in the 70s, you know. You'd go like to El Capitan down there in Pasadena, and it was a dollar when they were trying to save the drive. In the carload for a dollar, hoping to make some money at the concession.
That's probably why we went when I was a kid before Alicia blew them all away.
Yeah, well, and some of them came back for a while. I mean, Telephone Road survived as a XXX.
I was about to say, I remember seeing, I think they had a Cheech and Chong double feature we went to the drive-in to see, and I think I could just barely see another screen with some funny business going on. I imagine the windows got kind of steamy at that drive-in.
Oh, yeah. The I-45, it was down there by around Little York, I think it was. They still were operating it in the 90s.
Wow. With porn even?
Oh, well, I don't know if they ever went to porn. They were showing movies there, and they would have different prices because I think they had different screens.
Yeah.
You know, like they may have one that was like a dollar for a carload. But see, the thing is once you got inside, eventually they eliminated the boxes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. First thing they did was eliminate the cable to the box.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they lost a lot of boxes. Then you tune it in on your stereo.
Right.
Which was pretty cool, really.
Oh, yeah. It's like a shortwave broadcast or something, right?
It was just low frequency. I think it was low frequency FM, but I can't remember. So it wouldn't carry past the thing. They got licensed for it, I guess. Yeah, people would go there, you know. Couples would go there and never turn their car engine off. And, you know, that way the windows didn't steam up. But of course, you had an audio.
If you want to put on a show.
Well, you got to remember the 70s and the 80s were crazy. I mean, people doing drugs everywhere. Drinking was... In the 80s, you could still drink while driving. It was legal.
We still have drive-through liquor stores around here.
Hey, man, down there on Westheimer, Durham, what used to be a pizza place is a margaritas to go place. You know, it's just a little drive-through. There's no place to sit around and drink. But I guess if they seal the container, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, they have to put something over, like put a cover over the straw or some shit. Well, that's an impenetrable barrier.
I know for a fact, until 1991, we were still drinking and driving, because I didn't stop drinking till 1992, so I know we were still doing it.
Do you remember seeing Buck Rogers theatrically, or did you only watch it on TV? The Buck Rogers of the 25th Century,
no,
I should say.
I saw the Buck Rogers movie.
And we're talking about the Gil Gerard one from 79 now, right?
Oh, no, if you're talking about this 25th Century thing, yeah, I watched it when it was on TV.
You didn't see it in the theater?
No. I saw the TV show.
You saw the TV show, okay. So did you watch it in first run?
Yeah, sure. It was one of those things we just didn't miss. You smoke a bunch of pot, get you something to drink, and watch it.
How'd you feel about it when it was first coming on? As somebody who'd seen serials and read comic strips and all that kind of stuff, did you feel good about the representation of Buck Rogers on the show? Or his world?
Look, it was goofy then, and it's goofy now.
Yeah. My understanding, again, not having had a lot of exposure to the comic strip, shit was long gone by the time I was a kid. I understand they revived it for a little while, but I think it reflected the show when they did that. But my understanding is it's not a very good adaptation. It's not really faithful to the comic strip party at all. at all.
Oh, the 25th
The suits
century?
Are different. A lot of the aliens are different.
Nothing's the same.
There's no Twinkie or any shit like that.
No. And we were just talking about, I know there was something about that damn robot.
Twinkie,
yeah. I can't remember what it was. I was thinking that they used a kid in it, but you said no.
The actor was Felix Silla, and he played Cousin Ed on The Addams Family. So maybe that's what you're thinking of.
Now I remember he did the talk show circuit, Donahue, and several things.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, and he's been through town a few times at conventions and stuff, too. I think he's going to be at one next year, in fact.
Huh. Well, they wanted that robot to be like Fantasy Island or
Tattoo.
Or, and people, I remember when there'd be discussions, they compared him to that.
Tattoo?
Yeah. But there was also, you know, they compared him to the robots in Star Wars.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they pretty much squish C-3PO and R2-D2 together on that
one.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the voice was Mel Blanc from Looney Tunes.
Right. Well, maybe that was it. But I remember several discussions of them wanting that little robot to become an icon. Mm-hmm. And it never did.
Not really. I mean, I had an action figure when I was a kid, a Twinkie action figure. But they were nowhere near. I think I was the only guy I knew who had any Buck Rogers shit. I didn't have it for very long. I don't know if I lost it or what happened to it. Do you watch both seasons, too?
No, I remember being pissed when it went off there. When I'd watch something like that, every time they took the Avengers off there, I'd get upset about it. Charlie's Angels, all that stuff. When it went off there, I was mad. Of course, this stuff did not, like Kung Fu, it just continued on. It showed up on UHF right away. A lot of people watch that stuff. I don't know about Buck Rogers.
It definitely hit syndication.
Well, I knew your brothers watched because they watched it with me.
If I remember correctly, it ran on 39 on, I think, Saturday afternoons.
Yeah, it was on network TV.
No, but I mean when it went into syndication.
Oh, well, I don't know about the syndication because especially like you're talking about, I was probably working or something.
Well, this would still be the early 80s. I mean, the show went off the air in like 81.
Talking about being at work when it came on.
Oh, okay. Oh, I understand. I got you. Okay.
You know, and I wasn't going to watch it when I got off work. I wasn't going to watch UHF. Anyway.
Tell me about the story of this particular episode.
There's a bunch of old guys. I can feel that.
They were put out to pasture by Wilma Deering, who they raised up to be one of them, and then she put them out to pasture because they didn't fail. They failed their physicals. Who are the people, too, by the way?
Well, like, Peter Graves was one of them. Most of them guys, a couple of them were in old Westerns, but they were character actors, and I don't remember their names.
Yeah. What'd you know Peter Graves from?
Well, Peter Graves I always followed. Mission Impossible and Moonbase Alpha.
I'm not familiar with Moonbase Alpha. What's that?
It came on previous to this, I think. It was a moon base, and Peter Graves was in charge of it, if I remember right.
They fight aliens, or what happened? What was the deal?
All kinds of different things.
Random sci-fi bullshit.
There's always some kind of catastrophe.
But it was like in the future, or what?
Well, of course it was in the future, but you got to remember, in the 70s, we really believed we were going to be living on the moon in the 80s.
Yeah.
All those shows led you to believe, because let's face it, the space program went on for decades, and we always thought we were going to go to Mars or the moon again, you know. It hasn't happened. There's a bunch of science fiction stuff that was supposed to take place in the 80s and the 90s, you know.
Right.
Went to the cinema 1 and 2 with Blue Mule and saw 2001 when it was first released, and we really believed that that's where we were headed. I remember postulating at the time, it's not going to happen by 2001, it probably happened by 2020. 2030. And of course, you know, the needle never moves as far as you think it is.
Yeah.
But I thought I was pretty brilliant that I could see through 2000.
What a sham that 2001 was. The lady pilot is Elizabeth Allen, who mostly did Westerns. Woody Strode, and he's probably best known for Spartacus. Eddie Firestone, we have Wilma Deering. He has to get them back together to fight some evil James Bond villain kind of dudes.
Aircraft using old weapons, you know.
Because they got to get through an asteroid field that modern aircraft can't get through.
It's also a type of craft that dates for them. It was an ancient retired type of sled bomber or something.
Yeah, yeah. Tail guns and everything.
Yeah, it had tail guns in it.
Well, one thing I liked is they were bulkier ships and they were wearing more drab uniforms with little lightning bolts and stuff. It definitely looked like a 1950s style dress. It looks like something you'd have seen in a serial.
Well, that TV show did make fun of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just like the villains in this one.
the main villain, Robert Quarry, who's best known for playing... Do you remember Count Yorga?
Yeah.
What was the deal with that? I'm not familiar with that.
If I remember right, he was a villain in... what show was it? I can't remember the show right now. Yeah. I really didn't expect a question like that.
No worries. He was also in the sequel to the Dr. Fives, Dr. Fives Rides Again.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Fives. I got all those movies. But he didn't play anything because Dr. Fives was always the bad guy. There was nothing anywhere close to him.
So he played Commander Corliss, who was a gun runner who had been terribly burned after one of his plans had been thwarted 3 years earlier by Wilma Deering. He was now a cyborg. He had like a partially robotic face and some robotic attachments and stuff. Then of course he also had all the burns and stuff.
Right. His girlfriend had the mechanical metal hand because she apparently beat the flames off of him.
K.T. Stevens, I think. Shit, no, but she wasn't. I don't know. I can't keep track. The thing is neither of the older actresses that appear in the episode did any sci-fi stuff, did like westerns and dramas and stuff. So I don't mean to make them interchangeable. I think whoever played the villainess was pretty cool because she was really sadistic. She has a slave girl who's a deaf mute and she's just constantly tormenting this girl. She's got like this orb that has pictures of her long lost parents because she'd basically been enslaved since she was a young girl. The only thing she managed to have her own, and she finally catches her with the globe and crushes it in her robot hand. She reminds me a lot of the villain from Enter the Dragon. At one point, she's even wielding a flamethrower. And I don't remember did he have a flamethrower in the actual Enter the Dragon, or am I confusing it with Kentucky Fried Movie, where they were making fun of all the bullshit attachments that he had for his robot hand?
I can't come up with that stuff on the spur of the moment.
No
I'm
worries.
Concentrating on one thing.
So anyway, I think she very much steals the show. The male bad guy's okay, but the female one is just really sadistic and mean and everything else. The old pilots have got to lead this mission to blow up their base inside the asteroid belt because they've got old-style weapons from the 20th century, including nerve gas that they're going to use to basically...
No, they were destroying nerve gas.
Captured nerve gas from the Earth Defense Directorate, and then the bad guys were going to drop the nerve gas and kill everybody on Earth
right.
As revenge against both Earth plots being thwarted and specifically as revenge against Wilma Deering.
Yeah.
But then, during the course of the mission, besides the older people going in to try to stop them, also Buck and Wilma, of course, go in. They're the ones who get captured, which is cool, because one of the big themes of the episode is ageism, and Buck is constantly like, oh, just because you're old doesn't mean you can't be a badass pilot. And then sure enough, it's the kids, the whippersnappers, who get captured, and the old guys are sitting back going, so we're going to have to kill these kids or not? We love Dizzy D, as they call Wilma, but we got to complete the mission because we can't sacrifice the entire Earth just for Wilma. They keep their shit together. They're the ones who actually managed to pull shit off. Buck and Wilma almost tortured. It's one of those Dr. Evil things, Scott Evil kind of deals, where they've got him captured, and they even have the villainess with the robot hands squeeze both Wilma and Buck's hands, and yet somehow they don't break, even though we see her breaking down steel barriers, crushing glass and stone and wooden crates, everything else. It's classic supervillain bullshit. Buck, back in the 20th century, had a lady friend who taught deaf school children, learned sign language, and he managed to communicate with the slave girl through the sign language. They fight off their captors, they get thrown in the brig, the slave girl comes along, Wilma distracts the guards with her feminine wiles, the slave girl manages to release Buck and Wilma, they knock out the bad guys, they make it up to the base wearing the stormtrooper uniform, they get caught again, but just as they're about to get wiped out, the Fighting 69th bomb the base. That gives Wilma, Buck, and a slave girl a chance to break loose, grab an old machine gun. Bad guys think it's just like a flare pistol, and he's like, hey, no, I know how this works, and gives them a signal. And then they bust out of there. We were both complaining, why didn't you just gun them down? Because I guess they don't let Buck just outright kill people.
Or just blow away their consoles and make sure they're crippled.
Right.
But he doesn't. He shoots the floor with the 30 caliber.
Right, and then just like blast the door behind them so they can't get the door.
At least he didn't do what Rambo did and wrap the damn bullets around his arm.
Yeah, that didn't seem like a good idea.
No, it's not.
So what would have happened?
Huh?
What would have actually happened if that had been the case?
It would have tightened up around the arm and it
probably pulled his skin into it.
Well, I mean, you know, when stuff like that happens, you might forget to let go of the damn button.
Unless he gets hot, eh? So he get burned and maybe degloved.
The shells don't.
They're spitting out the other side.
They're spitting.
But the actual, if your skin gets caught up in the hardware, you're going to feel the heat from.
Well, you know, whenever they do stuff like that, those are supposed to be bipod or tripod mounted weapons.
Right. You're not even supposed to be holding the damn thing.
You're not supposed to be holding them. them in your hands.
Could you with the recoil anyway?
Oh, yeah. It's just like the Thompson I used to have. You see people in movies and stuff jerking around when they pull the triggers on those things. In the case of a Thompson, that thing weighs 19 pounds without the bullets on it. And it's a 45 caliber pistol bullet. You can hold the pistol with one hand, and you're holding this 19 pound. It doesn't jump around. There's no recoil. You could set it down on the counter and pull the trigger, and it wouldn't even move.
It's just a heavy son bitch.
That's right. And those 30 calibers are really heavy sons bitches. 30 caliber means 30-06 in this case. 30-06 people hunt deer with, and a light rifle, so it doesn't get heavy walking through. But yeah, you're shooting a bunch of shells, and a 30 caliber does vibrate and jump. But mostly it's the weight of the 30 caliber is why they mount them on some kind of base. They're heavy.
So at the end of the episode, they blow up the base. They blow up all the bad guys, which is a shame because there are some pretty cool villains. There's a fake out for a little bit that most of the squad had supposedly gotten killed. It turns out, no, everybody survives. Everybody gets wings back. It was a funny episode because the story editor on the show was Alan Brennert, who's beloved. He wasn't a prolific comic book writer, but the ones he did tended to be pretty well liked. And he was story editor on Buck Rogers. What he said in an interview for a book I read was that NBC was constantly drilling into their heads to make the show relatable. That shows like Battlestar Galactica and I assume Moonbase, whatever the fuck he was on, they weren't relatable enough. They were too highfalutin sci-fi bullshit. So they wanted to make sure the characters were grounded and down to earth and relatable to regular audiences.
Moonbase show, several people from Mission Impossible made it onto the show.
But it wasn't anywhere near as successful as Mission Impossible.
No, I don't think so.
No. By way of them trying to make this relatable, they had a lot of those feel-good 70s TV moments because you not only have them grappling with ageism with regard to the 69th Squadron, but you also are grappling with prejudice against the deaf-mute girl, treating her like she's a simpleton when really she's intelligent. It's funny, too, because in the age of Scarlett Johansson wanting to play transvestite Asian people, they actually did get a deaf girl to play this character. Verisimilitude is not exactly a new concept in Hollywood. She didn't have a lot of a career, and she looked a lot like another actress, but I can't place who she was. But she only did like this in a T.J. Hooker, and that was about it. And so it's like a very special episode almost. And they're joking, like, well, the one thing we don't have is the dog. The National Enquirer had rescued a dog. It was like near death. The offices like taking this dog in and nursed it back to health, and it became the mascot of National Enquirer for a while. TV producers cut a deal where they would get a cover story about Buck Rogers in the National Enquirer back when that meant something, since it was on every newsstand in the country.
Real humanists there.
They're joking. It's like, all we need in this episode is a dog, and sure enough, National Enquirer is part of the trade. They want their dog to appear in the episode. So the one thing that they drew a line in is, all right, well, we're not putting the dog in the fucking cockpit. The dog stays on Earth. What did you think about Gil Gerard as Buck Rogers?
I always thought he was too homogenized type figure. It's like I've told you before. I try not to nitpick these things. But even at the time, Buck Rogers was never a time traveler, okay? And of course, in the 25th century, that's exactly what he is.
The joke that they had was that he was Burt Reynolds in space.
You know, I remember somebody saying that back in the day, but I never really saw the connection.
I've seen the argument made that Gil Gerard didn't have the same level of charisma as a Burt Reynolds.
He didn't have dark features. It's not that I didn't have a lot of success back in my day, but I didn't have dark features. In the 70s, Mediterranean furniture was in, women growing their pit hair was in, some of them even grew their leg hairs, and they called it Mediterranean. Burt Reynolds, who I think is Italian descent or something, I can't remember. You know, he had the dark hair and everything, especially if they had dark hair and a tan. That was what the girls really liked. I was a blonde-haired super guy. Surfboard in one hand and a cowboy hat in the closet.
Not necessarily in vogue.
Right.
What about Erin Gray as Wilma Deering?
Well, I wasn't really paying attention.
I mean, in general, though. Not necessarily this specific episode. The show sometimes will have some cool progressive, feministic leanings, and they don't have an episode like this one where it's Wilma's fault the two cadets get blown up going into the asteroids that when they weren't supposed to because they were just being trained. They should have been in the mission in the first place. Buck warned her about that, and then the guys get killed. By the way, shout out to Paquita. One of the pilots is Cornelius Fudge, I think the guy's name is, Minister of Magic in the Harry Potter movies. And it's funny because I kept looking for an older guy, and I kept thinking, oh, is he the villain guy, or is he this older guy? And I realized, no, this was fucking 40 years ago. He wasn't an older guy yet. He's actually one of the young young, dumb cadets who gets themselves killed, it turns out. So she gets those cadets killed, and then the book I read was pointing out that Wilma had also helped get some cadets killed in the movie because she wasn't letting them follow Buck's orders. So she's kind of responsible for a lot of deaths at this point. And they lay it right at her feet. Plus, she's the one responsible for decommissioning the 69th, even though ultimately it's proven that they were valid pilots and that they did deserve to continue to be in the air. And so she's proven wrong there, too. So her character really has done a lot of disservice in this episode, unfortunately. But setting that aside, what do you think about Erin Gray's portrayal of Wilma Deering as a whole?
I saw the whole show as homogenized. You know, I didn't take artistic coup. You know, I just let it play out.
Buck Rogers is not a show you analyze like that.
Tell you the
truth. That's why the show's called Buck Fucking Rogers. Most of them giving you an opportunity to tell me whether or not you think she's fine.
She never piqued my interest.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it even on the show that comes to mind that you were into?
There would be girls that come and win on it that I like. There always is.
Mm-hmm.
But just because she had the lead, I mean, it wasn't that she was bad looking. She was just never my type, I guess.
I think you're the first person we've had on the show where you weren't into Wilma.
Well, I like them petite and dark, and she wasn't those things.
She's kind of tall?
Yeah, just like Buck Rogers in this thing. She's kind of homogenized.
Yeah. It's a pretty white bread show.
It is. It's a very white bread show.
I want to say it was NBC Sunday night, but I can't say that for a certainty.
Well, when the $6 million man is rougher than you are, you know, Battlestar.
Lee Majors did have more grit than Gil Gerard, I'll admit.
Yeah. And I think he got more tang, too.
You know, I don't think he's gotten a bit of tang this whole damn show.
No. If I remember right, in the whole series, they kind of looked at each other and stuff, but there was never anything. Every time you think something was going to happen, one or the other would act like they were cousins or something.
Right. Well, it's just like in this episode, Twiki asks Wilma to dance. She says no. Buck shows up in peak 70s, you know, like corduroys and shit. He'd managed to find the deaf girl's parents and reunite them. He's thanked by having Wilma ask him if he wants to dance, him saying yeah, and then her returning to Twiki and saying, all right, you got a dance partner now. And Twiki's like, mind if I leave? For a guy in such tight clothing, he's kind of neuter boy. You can see everything's there, but
yeah,
you don't get the sense of
it. Bottoms, they were flares, and they were cotton material, but Ooh. He was wearing a vest.
That's one more thing I want to talk about, too. The 69th Squadron, they all get into the super white, super exposing outfits at the end. Those guys look fucking good. I wish I looked as good as old ass Woody Strode and Peter Graves, man.
Well,
those guys
Peter
were rocking
Graves,
that
the
shit.
The reason why he had such a great run is women thought he was something.
Tall and lean.
Well, and he had the white hair.
And he was lustrous. He was nice and full head of hair.
Well, you know,
ivory white.
He looked mature with the white hair.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like Paquita's been on an episode of Buck Fucking Rogers, and when I asked her if she liked any of the people on the show, she went for Dr. Hewer, their boss.
Yeah.
So it's like, that just goes to show. Sometimes mature, sometimes you can rock mature.
I have difficulty having any attraction to man whatsoever.
Right, but I'm just saying.
He's such a limp dick.
Who, Hewer?
No.
Oh, Buck.
Doctor.
Oh, okay. Wait, Dr. Hewer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see maybe Peter Graves. He shows some manhood. But then again, people in 1979, no, I remember that was when they wanted men to show their feelings.
Exactly. I was thinking that maybe Buck was going for the whole Alan Alda thing, like Mr. Sensitive 70s guy.
Sometimes you forget these things. It wasn't until we started discussing that I remembered that crap. Those phases come in and they come out. You can probably look around and pay attention. I don't pay attention to fads anymore, but there's got to be two or three floating out there right now.
There always are, true that. Well, I'm running out of battery because I decided to use my little Zoom instead of the usual recorder. But overall, not a bad episode. I didn't love it. I was kind of bored with it, to be honest with you. It was well-intentioned. Cool villains, cool guest stars, but just kind of limped along. The action, there was a few good Buck Fu moments, though. He really gets some high kicks in on this one, and he's wearing the actual uniform, and it looks really cool with him when they kick and they've got the black soles on their boots and everything, but not enough action for my taste, and I don't know, just a little slow for me, a little sappy too.
That's one of those shows where you gotta be into the corny value. Smoking Mary Jane and drinking tequila, watching that show, it's the funniest damn thing you ever seen. I don't ever remember laughing that hard watching Battlestar Galactica.
No, that one was a drag.
Well, what you're talking about the
old one. Yeah, I think the old one was, I mean, it was all religious parables and shit, you know? It's like, give me Buck fucking Rogers any day.
Yeah, well, I think it was, there was a lot of Jews on it, and I think it was kind of a Moses thing.
Promised land and all that kind of, yada.
But when it was on, man, their robots were cool.
And hey, look, they actually have fucking Battlestar Galactica conventions. They don't have any fucking Buck Rogers conventions, so.
Well, and
some
people
clearly took to it.
I think it was Disneyland or one of those big parks. Maybe it was Universal Studios. Had a whole bunch of Battlestar Galactica stuff on the park. Yeah, I think they even used that in those Eddie Murphy movies or something. They went on to one of those sets, Beverly Hills Cop, one of the sets from Terminator, and they went on to one of the sets of Battlestar Galactica.
I saw a lot of Eddie Murphy movies when I was a kid. I don't remember that, but maybe.
Well, I've got them. I got the Beverly Hills Cop movie, so I'm pretty sure that did happen. I don't think it was in the first one.
I need Mr. Fix-It. I bet you he'd know this shit. I gotta hit him up.
Well, I mean, or you can watch the movie.
Sorry for the long episode release gap. I never got around to recording the plot to Kill a City with anyone. Since it's one of the best regarded episodes, I think we may save it and a few others for when we have to slog through the notoriously bad and rather brief second season. Also, I thought I got it on mic, but eventually old dude realized that he was confusing Peter Graves with fellow Mission Impossible teammate Martin Landau on the Moonbase show that was actually called Space 1999, which I personally never fuck with. And now the Earth Defense Directory, the 108th Sage, Anime Freaks, Anime Nostalgia, Austin Kirkendall, Bake Man Says, Bernie 2020, Becky Maddox, Bob Buster, Chris at Bad Books for Beginners, Class 1000, a Marvel Superheroes Live RPG, Collected Edition, Comics in the Golden Age, DeBeche, Daniel R. Budnick, Daniel French for Sponius Sound Design, Doki Doki Hispanic, El Romero Romero, Fanholes Podcast, Gregory Litchfield, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, Helmuth Brickisack, History of Comics on Film, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jeffrey Brown, Just in Time with J&T Bagger, Keith G. Baker, Luke Giaconetti, Mark Woodland, Mike Rockatansky, Mike Siebert, Radio Podcast, Odell Abner Dracula, Paul Matthew Carr, Professor Frenzy, Randomitable, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Richard G, Ryan Daly, Saturday Comics, Slangward Scott, Sphinx Magoo 2020, Stimbot 5000, Sunsmile Moths 4, Tim Price, and Tuck. Randy Caldwell wrote, and a few short years later, Cesar Romero and Anna Alicia would be co-stars on Falcon Crest. Cesar Romero is my Joker too. On those rare times I think about the Joker, I hear the Batman 1966 villain music theme. And finally, a quick shout out to sometimes listener Chris Thompson, who used to be at my favorite comic shop in London, Orbital Comics. However, they didn't have a vintage Buck Rogers movie poster on the wall like the awesome Deadhead Comics in Edinburgh. In case you didn't know, Buck was a bigger hit in the UK than he ever was in the States. The BBC had to move Doctor Who to a different time slot because Buck beat him like a drum. There even used to be a Buck Rogers themed restaurant there. Too bad it closed long ago.
Characters and events depicted in this podcast are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The television program Buck Rogers in the 25th Century is copyrighted by Universal City Studios Incorporated. All rights are reserved. Buck Rogers characters are by and courtesy of Leisure Concepts Incorporated and Robert C. Dill. Produced in association with Glenn A. Larson Productions and Bruce Lansbury Productions Limited and Universal, an MCA company. Buck fucking Get Down Rogers is a fan production. All copyrighted materials under fair use with no infringement intended.